What was is that Spanish song? What is it? Man.
Spanish.
Mamacita, mamacita. Who sings that? And what is the words? This is killing me. Mamacita.
I have no idea what song.
What?
That's the no, I sincerely don't know what you're talking about. What song? That's all you remember?
Mamacita, Lupita, or something. It's all in Spanish.
Call me mamacita.
Call me mamacita. You know that?
It's by the Black Eyed Peas?
Black Eyed Peas? No.
No, that's the band. What's wrong with you today?
What's wrong with you?
Welcome back to Not Great, your weekly diorama of cosmic misery and tangible despair. I'm your host, Sachi Cole, culture writer at BuzzFeed News and probably the first person who would die in a horror movie. We finally wrapped up two full weeks of conventions, so let's get into it so we can begin the process of forgetting it ever even happened. I don't know if there are words to describe the viewing experience of watching the Republican National Convention, but let me try. Have you ever pressed your fingers into your eyes until your vision blurs and you see flashes of phosphenes? And for a moment, you've lost literal perspective, you're off kilter, and you need a moment to regain equilibrium. Watching the RNC was like that, except it lasted 4 days and nothing I did, not heavy drinking, not ritualistic clenching and unclenching of my jaw, and not pressing my eyeballs further into my skull seemed to stop that emotional vertigo. Well, that's a nice way of putting it. There's another more accurate version. If you could have actually heard my inner monologue during the RNC, it sounded more like this war cry from noted gay frog messenger Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's probably not accurate either. It's just hard to encapsulate. As a journalist, or as some of my antagonists might call me,
a journalist,
it's often frustrating that I can't say exactly how I feel. There are risks of getting sued, of affecting the work of my colleagues who do more straightforward and more valuable reportage, of driving my editor to the brink of insanity because I keep begging her to let me call Eric Prince a fuckable Satan. But then, every so often, you get to interview someone like Reza Aslan, author, political commentator, and religious scholar, and it gives you some release. Because hey, even if I can't say it, he sure can.
I mean, it's just another example of the normalization of a fascist, lawless president who is responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of Americans and who, for some reason, has managed to turn the entire Republican Party into not just a cult of personality, but a death cult. I mean, when you have hundreds of people sitting elbow to elbow, you know, maskless, with no other reason than to make the supreme leader happy, there's no way to talk about it except as a death cult. And that's what the GOP is now. And by the way, that's not just an opinion. There's data to prove this. When 57% of self-described Republicans believe that 170,000 deaths, more Americans than died in World War I and II, when that is an acceptable number, then you have a party that has lost all, any claim to kind of ideological purity and has become nothing more than a death cult.
Oh, okay. So we're going in. All right. I can get with it. There's no point in comparing the RNC to the DNC, just as there's no point to compare parties. The RNC spent most of the week banging the same drums they've been beating on for 3.5 years. They talked about how you're definitely going to die if you don't elect Trump for another term.
The woketopians will settle for Biden because they will make him an extra in a movie written, produced, and directed by others. It's a horror film, really. They'll disarm you, empty the prisons, lock you in your home, and invite MS-13 to live next door.
They complained about looting and rioting during the same week that a Blue Lives Matter supporter allegedly killed 2 people at a protest.
President Trump and I will always support the right of Americans to peaceful protest. But rioting and looting is not peaceful protest. Tearing down statues is not free speech.
And of course, they falsely claimed, repeatedly, that Joe Biden will defund and eradicate the police, putting all your white suburban housewives at risk because big bad Antifa will come into your safe neighborhoods, open up trendy coffee shops with BLM signs in the window, and then, I don't know, eat your dog?
Don't let the Democrats take you for granted. Don't let them step on you. Don't let them destroy your families, your lives, and your future. Don't let them kill future generations because they told you and brainwashed you and fed you lies that you weren't good enough.
But the thing that came up with the most frequency wasn't coronavirus or unemployment or the national debt or the wall or Jacob Blake or even the alleged Kenosha shooter whose name I refuse to give more real estate in my ever-shrinking brain. What came up most, for some reason, was the least relevant topic of 2020, the year that I forgot what it was like to use a public bathroom without having to update my will.
Our country wasn't built by cancel culture.
Culture that cancels.
Cancel a culture.
Being canceled.
Cancellation.
Canceled.
Cancel.
Cancel.
Cancel. Cancel culture. Dangerous.
Canceled.
Ah, yes. Cancel culture. For many years, the Republican Party has been acting like they're the party of the aggrieved, of people who can't catch a break, as if being told to be a decent human is tantamount to having your limbs tied to four separate horses, and then having those horses literally rip you into quarters.
There was a moment in Joe Biden's speech where he was announcing Kamala Harris as his running mate, where he said, I think it's like the line of the election, and he should pull it out at any time, that whining is what Donald Trump does best. It's just a whine fest. Just nonstop whining, you know, Stop whining. You're actually in charge. Cancel culture is so funny because the truth is that the vast majority of Americans don't know what it is and don't even care about what it is. More interestingly, though, as just kind of a sociological experiment, it is interesting to watch people who have had the racial and economic privilege to do and say whatever the hell they wanted to without any fear of consequence, suddenly be held responsible for their actions and their words. And it's such a, I think, an unusual experience for them that this whole cancel culture term has become this kind of rallying cry for all these, you know, privileged white people who are saying, wait, so I'm not allowed to call black people monkeys anymore? Is that the thing? Like, that's a new thing now?
In 2017, Usland's CNN show Believer was actually canceled after Donald Trump announced his Muslim travel ban. And Usland wrote a tweet calling Trump a piece of shit, an embarrassment to America, an embarrassment to humankind, and a stain on the presidency. Frankly, compared to some of the stuff the actual president tweets, this is about as mundane as saying you're not big on eating fruit, but that didn't seem to matter to CNN at the time.
I have a legitimate grievance against the way that I was treated by CNN, and more specifically by the head of CNN, Jeff Zucker. But I have never, not once, said that they didn't have the right to fire me. They're a commercial enterprise. They can do whatever.
Free, they're free to do whatever they want.
They can do whatever the hell they want to. Never, ever, ever did I ever frame this as they took away my free speech. No, there is no free speech. It's a business. And they decided that I'm bad for the bottom line because they wanted to pander to Trump. I can criticize CNN for constantly pandering to Trump. And I can criticize Jeff Zucker for being the amoral slimeball that he is, for being the man who literally created Donald Trump, for being the man who literally got Donald Trump elected, and for being the man who is now making billions of dollars pretending to oppose Donald Trump. But I can't criticize him for, quote, taking away my free speech. You know, I think cancel culture has become a rallying cry for the right because of the fact that for the first time, I think really in modern history, they are being held responsible for their words, their thoughts, their ideas. And responsibility feels uncomfortable for them.
Nearly everyone at the convention spoke about cancel culture. privileged, powerful people like Ivanka Trump and even the president himself, who, again, has not been canceled through Twitter suspensions or impeachment or the Electoral College or media coverage or repeated accusations of sexual assault and harassment, brought it up as if they're being punished all the time for just being themselves. Trump, after all, is the same man who tried to boycott the company who makes the tires his presidential state car drives on because employees were told not to wear his tacky hats to work. Frankly, I would love it if cancel culture was a real thing for the Republican Party, because that would suggest that people who need to be held accountable are actually held accountable for literally anything. But the Republican Party, during, before, and after the convention, are using cancel culture as a way to distract from how poorly this country has been run under their tutelage. Take, for example, Nick Sandman, who was photographed in 2019 wearing a MAGA hat and smirking at Nathan Phillips, an indigenous activist.
I learned what was happening to me had a name. It was called being canceled, as in annulled, as in revoked, as in made void. Canceled is what's happening to people around this country who refuse to be silenced by the far left.
What exactly has happened to Nick since that photo went viral? I didn't even know his full name before the convention, so what cancellation has even been foisted upon him? Speaking at the Republican National Convention about being canceled is like standing in front of your enormous home in St. Louis and waving a gun at peaceful protesters just walking by claiming you're being threatened. That sounds familiar. It's almost like it happened. I just can't place it. Aslan had his own experiences with Sandman as well.
The one thing that I want to say about the whole Nick Sandman thing, right? I was widely condemned for making what I thought was a, you know, a funny joke about Nazis.
What was your joke?
Oh, that he had a punchable face. Because we were all talking about how this was, if you remember, this was during the whole, should you punch a Nazi? Remember, do you remember? Should you punch
it? Were you here by then? Should you punch a Nazi? I don't know if you know this about me. I was pro-punching Nazis. I think you should do it.
I am so pro-punching Nazis. Look, you should punch Nazis whenever you see Nazis. And that's the joke that I was making. It didn't come off very well. And so, you know, I apologized and eventually deleted the tweet because my wife told me to.
Were people upset that you were recommending that we punch a minor or that we punch a Nazi?
Yes.
Oh, it was the minor.
It was the minor thing. All right. It was the minor thing. So whatever. I apologize and I made it clear that it was a, you know, trying to be funny, and it's hard to be funny on Twitter. That said, and I said this before and I want to say it one more time and I want to be as crystal clear. I want to go on the record here.
Thank you.
The MAGA hat is a KKK hood. That's what it is. If you wear that hat, you support somebody who is unambiguously, unapologetically, objectively a racist. So fuck Nick Sandman.
Let's just check in with what's going on in my brain right quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Right. Good. It's strange that the GOP is choosing cancel culture as the red herring of this campaign. It's a topic that most Americans don't totally understand, and frankly, most people probably don't give a shit about it. Who cares about perceived censorship on college campuses at this exact moment? Kim, there's people that are dying. But it's the only real grievance that the Republican Party can latch onto right now. They won in 2016. They've been winning by installing conservative judges and lifetime appointments, in using white fear against black and brown communities, in the slow but steady destruction of America's reputation around the world. If their goal was to make the world a darker, harder, more stressful place for people of color, for black people in particular, for queer and trans people, for disabled people, girl, you got it. The reliance on cancel culture as their main talking point is more proof that maybe this party is beyond repair.
The GOP is beyond redemption. It's beyond repair. It's not just a few individuals. It's the party up and down. Every last ounce of it, every trace of it has been completely and utterly compromised by Trumpism, by racism, by white supremacy. And the only cure for it is absolute utter defeat and the sort of sweeping away into the dustbin of history. So perhaps the problem isn't the party, Perhaps the problem is the constituency. The problem is the people. The problem is that 57% that thinks 170,000 dead, meh, worth it. You know, it's cool. What to do about that is what to do about the human condition. You know, yeah, exactly. Fuck is the right answer. Yeah.
This will keep me alive for at least another year.
And good luck staying alive for another year, by the way. At this point, that's not by any means guaranteed. Like, hey, good luck.
As my brain, which is currently melting out of my left ear, would say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Now the trolls will start trolling you. I don't care.
Oh, Papa, they've never stopped. What do you can't start if you've never stopped.
They will have another... wait a minute. I have some vitamin B12 in my mouth.
Jesus Christ. They already know about you. The trolls already are very aware of you.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Those who wish you harm, they're aware of me too?
Everybody is, yes.
How come they're not afraid of me then?
Because you're 5'2" and you live in the Canadian Midwest.
For the last few weeks, we asked you guys to send us your questions about the election, the American political process, and the swamp that has, for so many years, been promised to be drained. Blessedly, we have Kate Shaw with us, law professor and co-host of Strict Scrutiny, the podcast, to give us some answers. Hi, Kate.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Kate's going to join us for a new segment, a game show called
I Don't Get It.
For every question Kate can answer, she gets nothing. She gets absolutely nothing, just like America. Kate, we got a lot of questions for you, some from distressed American voters, some from distressed American non-eligible voters, and some from confused and distressed Canadians. I hope you can help. Okay, our first question is coming from Nico in Michigan. Hypothetically, what would happen if Trump loses the election, but he just refuses to accept the results and doesn't leave at the end of his term?
That would play out in the courts. And ultimately, most likely, the U.S. Supreme Court would make a decision. And, you know, we have 230 years of presidents and political actors abiding by rulings of the Supreme Court, even ones that they deeply disagree with. I'm just not sure, you know, a decision not to leave isn't something that can be unilaterally implemented by a president, right? There's a whole apparatus around him of White House staff members and importantly members of Secret Service and the military, right? There's a sort of huge military presence in and around the White House. And I actually just think that the kind of rule of law values in those institutions and individuals who work in those institutions are strong enough and entrenched enough that I can't imagine him amassing sufficient support to actually kind of thwart a decision of the Supreme Court that, you know, that goes against him.
Wow. A brief and hypothetical piece of evidence that the office is actually bigger than the man who holds it. Thanks, Kate. A great answer. And for this, you get... nothing, because I had to think about the possibility of Trump's first term never ending. Next, we have a voice memo sent to us from Barb in Toronto.
My question is, why, when we are seeing such a huge rise in progressive attitudes in the United States, where people are quite literally risking their lives for their political values and their beliefs, do we not see that reflected in any of the politics in the United States? And if the Democratic Party isn't willing to reflect progressive values, why is it so hard to start up a third party that actually gives the people what they are demanding in the streets every single day?
Kate, what say you?
One is, I think it's right that you have seen a rise in support for a lot of progressive values. I mean, criminal justice reform is one very recent example, but there are others. So the Senate isn't representative. The House, in theory, is representative, but in practice is not necessarily so. And the presidency is, you know, in fact, it's not the case that we popularly choose the president. The president is chosen by this bizarre institution. even if 51% of, say, 51% of your population goes for one candidate and 49% for the other, all 29 of your electoral votes go to the winning candidate. And so that means that you can actually, and historically we have seen this happen, lose and potentially lose big the popular vote in the country. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by almost 3 million in 2016. And it's not the only time in history. And in fact, we are seeing it increasingly happen. You know, it's certainly conceivable that it could happen again in 2020. And if that popular votes, that popular policies will necessarily translate to the selection of representatives who support those policies, because we actually don't have a particularly representative system at the federal level. Locally, things look a little bit better. And I do think you have seen more progressive legislation.
Great. I'm sad again. This answer gets minus 5,000 points because this made my seasonal depression a year-round affliction. Kate, we got a handful of questions around mail-in ballots. This one is from Melanie in Boston. Once you request a mail-in ballot, can you decide to vote in person instead? Or does requesting that ballot lock you in? No one here wants to do a voter fraud, but if your ballot doesn't show up in time, or you're worried about the USPS, can you just decide to vote in person as long as you don't mail that ballot?
If you request a ballot and you decide you want to vote in person, you can absolutely still vote in person, including early in person on election day, anytime. You cannot, you know, return more than one absentee ballot. So the one sort of place that things get complicated is if you do send your absentee ballot and you're worried about it not having arrived, or you have some actual reason to believe it hasn't arrived, can you still show up on election day and vote? And the answer should be yes. And election officials should be able to identify if, say, your ballot arrives after election day. They should be able to see you have already cast an in-person vote and thus pull the absentee ballot out of the pile. Will that work perfectly all the time? Probably not.
A clear answer that still betrays a bit of confusion because the election process is built for votes to be carried by horseback to the town square for manual counting, and not made for a time in a world where I can summon some of the most disgusting pornography made by man, of course a man made it, on my phone, which is small enough to sit in the crevasse between my boob and my bra. 5,000 points. Kate, one last one before we wrap up. This time it's from me. I can't vote, and I can't volunteer at a polling station either. What can people like me do during this election in order to be helpful?
So there are all kinds of campaigns out there to do things like send postcards and letters to kind of, you know, potentially marginal voters. So there's so I would say to like hook up with an organization that is trying to do, because you can certainly participate in that kind of activity. Things like text phone banking to just remind people to vote, to ask people whether they have requested and returned their absentee ballot. So there are all kinds of ways that anyone eligible to vote or not can participate in, you know, sort of getting the word out. And then, you know, I think like networks are personal and family and friend networks are sort of like the most effective thing. So, you know, like I always vote, but like I actually always appreciate like when I get these kind of mass texts from random, you know, friends and people in my social network, like, have you voted yet? Like in 2018, that happened a lot. And I think it's going to happen now.
Finally, my chronic and obnoxious texting to my American friends will be of use. For this, you get nothing, which means you leave this game with a grand total of absolutely nothing. Just like living in America, Kate, you put in the work and you're left exhausted and disoriented, and you still have to work in order to have health insurance. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on
I Don't Get It!
Well, we've reached the end of another misery cycle, which means it's time for a reward, where we find something on the internet that brings us joy and comfort, and we ask ourselves, is that anything? Today's blip of pleasure comes from Gracie on TikTok, where she finally demands answers for why I even had to learn how to spell the word algebra.
I was just doing my makeup for work, and I just wanted to tell you guys about how I don't think math is real. And I know that, like, it's real because we all, like, learn it in school or whatever, but who came up with this concept? And you're like, Pythagoras. But how? How did he come up with this? He was living in like the, I don't know, whenever he was living, but it was not now where you can like have technology and stuff, you know? Like he didn't even have plumbing. And he was like, let me worry about y equals mx plus b. Which first of all, how would you even figure that out? How would you like start on the concept of algebra? Like, what did you need it for?
demanding answers in 2020 for the work and legacy of Pythagoras from a smart young woman who knows when she smells bullshit. Is that anything? Well, that's the week. It was a tough one, like all the weeks before it, but at least we have 4 years to recover from the collective PTSD that the letters R, N, and C, in that order, has given us. RCN is fine. CNR is also good. NRC honestly pushing it, but whatever, there's time. It's not great, but maybe next week will be better.
Not Great is a production of BuzzFeed News and Embassy Row. Our executive producers are Carolina Vatslaviak, Charlotte Sims, Samantha Hennig, Julia Cassidy, Anna Marie Johnson, and Barry Jean Dorman. The show is edited by Maureen Vegas. Today's episode was written and produced by me, and our theme music is by Shawnee Cage. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Saatchi, that's S-C-A-A-C-H-I, or email the show at notgreat@buzzfeed.com. Smell you later.
Yeah, nothing. Again, there's something I can't help with. I can't say anything. I can't do anything. I wish I could. I was able to hold you when you were small, and then you shot up. That's the way life goes. That's fine. And I'm probably shrinking as I go, and I will become a little Andy Rooney or whatever that character was.
It's okay. I'll put you in my pocket when you're little.